ANCAST is brought to you by Right Stuff. Check out some great deals on anime, manga, figures, and more at rightstuff.com.
And the crypt doors creak and the tombstones quake.
Happy haunts
materialize.
Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I think you will. Hey everybody, welcome to ANCAST. I'm Zach Birchie. Hope is here.
Hello.
And it's been a long time since we've taped one in person, and I mean like in person in his apartment, probably 5 years.
Yeah, since the beginning really.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I've upgraded apartments since then.
Yeah, and a lot of other things. It's Justin's here,
hey,
obviously.
Everyone.
Yeah, it's been a little while since we've had you on the show. I think that's largely just because, like, in general, your life has kind of elevated it. You've gotten to a place in life where you're not necessarily consuming a ton of media that would make it so that a regular appearance on this show would really work out too much. That's kind of it.
Well, it's multiple things. I mean, I don't have time to watch almost anything.
And a lot of it you can't really have a comment on because plenty of it you worked on.
Yeah, or will work on.
Yeah, so you can't come on and be like, oh, that show was great because the odds that you made the Blu-ray for it are not low. So,
right.
Yeah, it's... but it's great to have you back when we can have you on, and it's nostalgic, I guess, to record in person just because it's been such a long time. It takes me back. Like, I used to haul our mixer and all the equipment, all the mics and everything up to your apartment in Los Feliz, and that was a long time ago.
Yep. And now, look, we're in Glendale, and I'm using this little tiny recorder thing.
Yeah.
We say look figuratively, obviously, you know.
Yeah, right.
Imagine.
Yeah, exactly. So we're just going to answer some Twitter questions, and we actually have an email backlog. I kind of save the email questions for when we do these shows with you, largely because when we get those questions, they're usually longer, and typically they are asking specifically us something.
Yeah.
So I've got some of those, and we've got some Twitter questions. But before we do any of that, how are you doing? How's it been going?
It's been a crazy month. I've been out of town a lot. This last week or so, I was gone in the United Kingdom. I was in Edinburgh for Scotland Loves Anime.
Right. This is a film festival.
Right. And it's a film festival. Basically, it's its own separate company, but it's run more or less by the crew that runs Anime Limited, which is a client of mine. So they had me over as a judge, which was a real honor and a lot of fun, and got to meet Jonathan Clements, who I've long admired his work, and getting to actually finally meet him in the flesh was pretty cool. And sit and watch four new, brand new anime films that I had not seen yet and enjoyed to widely variable degrees.
So what did you see?
First I saw the one of these that a lot of other people have seen is Expelled from Paradise.
Okay, yeah.
And I hated it.
I could have told you that. Like, I could have said, like, don't watch Expelled from Paradise, Justin. You will not like it. I liked it. I didn't think you would at all. It's too straightforward and blockbustery.
Well, not only that, it's like, it's so talky and, like, just bursting at the seams with expository dialogue that doesn't need to be there. Has these weird tonal shifts that didn't work at all for me. Honestly, I thought it also really had kind of an edge of misogyny to it.
You think so?
Oh yeah. The whole, like I was saying after the screening, was like that, you might have well called this mansplaining the movie.
I would feel you there, except that, having seen a bunch of that guy's work,
talking about Urobuchi?
Yeah, he usually puts a guy in that position. It just so happened to be a girl this time, and it wasn't. None of the stuff that was being mansplained to her was about her gender, and she didn't. It wasn't gendered, you know. But I mean, like, I can see if I didn't know that guy's work, I probably might say that. But it wasn't.
I mean, I've seen Madoka Magica, but that's pretty much it for Urobuchi stuff.
Right. Well, he has two other things he's written where the mentor and like foolish, ambitious person role were both boys. So it was the same thing he's kind of written before, except this time it was a girl and it was sort of a romance. But yeah, I mean, I also liked the movie. I did not like the way it looked, but I liked the script and the direction.
I will say, you know, it is cel-shaded 3D CG.
Mm-hmm.
And as bad as that always looks, this is actually the best I've seen.
It is. It's the best anime CG I've seen. The thing is that in moments, there are still frames that look like 2D animation because yes. the lines are not clipping. Like, it can set it up so that at a very certain angle, at a very certain pose, it will look convincingly like 2D animation. Mm-hmm. The minute it starts moving, and they're using that technique where they're cutting frames out of it to make it look like anime, it never looks good. Yeah. And you just want to go to them and say, stop, just make it move fluidly. Like, this is what is turning American audiences off to your CG. Our CG is 30 frames a second. This is operating much lower than that.
And unfortunately, the conversations that have been repeated to me with the creators of these is that they are really convinced that this looks good.
Yes, I know. I interviewed, before we saw the film, I interviewed the director and asked him about that. And he said, the producer. And he's like, we've got it this time. Mm. This is it. We figured it out. And I watched the movie and he's like, nope. Sorry, guys.
And in fairness, like, that is the best one of those I've seen as far as the way it looks, but it's still not up to, like, here's the par. And it's like, that is the closest to the par I've seen, but it's still, like, not there yet. And, the funny thing, it's, like, now burned into my brain watching the, like, behind-the-scenes production for Kill la Kill, where they show you the CG models they made, and they show you the pre-rendered before they cut every third frame out or whatever. Or was it every two? Like, they spared one
they
frame.
They cut two out of three,
yeah. Yeah, they cut two out of three is what I meant. And, they show you the fully rendered, like, it's Ryuko getting blasted across a hallway. And they show you that before cutting the frames out. And it looks great. It looks perfectly fine. Nobody would, you know, give a shit or care. And then they do, like, and now we'll fix it. And they make it look like anime by taking out two of every three frames. And it's like, no, I saw the pre, like, I saw what you did before that. And it was way better looking. Stop it, stop it, stop it.
What they're missing is that, you know, they vary the frame rate that they animate on when they do it by hand. Mm-hmm. When you're just blindly taking out two out of three frames, that doesn't look natural.
Thing, no,
it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Well, anyway, so that was Expelled from Paradise. Okay, so the second film was called Empire of Corpses, which it's part of that trilogy from Project Ito. It's a zombie trilogy of that each of the three movies went to different studios. And, of course, one of them went to Monglobe, and Monglobe went out of business shortly before they finished it. So this one was the one by Studio Wit. Or Wit Studio, rather, and they apparently, knowing that Genocidal Organ wasn't going to make it out in time, they rushed this out the door.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one strike it had going against it. The other strike it had going against it, and this is a much bigger problem, is that the Project Ito guy, Satoshi Ito, he was very, very, very ill for a very long time, and he died while writing this book.
Yeah, okay.
And he only got 30 pages into it.
And they're going to make it anyway?
Well, they did make it anyway, okay. And I saw it, and they were not up to finishing that story.
Okay.
Because here's the thing, it's actually really pretty. It is a gorgeous piece of animation. I actually really like the construct of it. It had a lot of potential, but nobody could follow this thing.
Mm.
Nobody could tell. Like, afterwards, we were discussing it, and I'm like, what happened? And nobody could figure it out. And of course there's like, it's hardcore Fujoshi bait also.
Okay.
Which is neither a plus nor a minus, but it's just wink, wink, nudge, nudge the whole time. But while they're winking and nudging, they're completely forgetting major elements of the story. They're going down whole paths that they never follow. They're introducing new characters and forgetting about them. They're changing the rules of how zombies work. Mm. They're reproducing like vampires at one point. It's so disappointing. It really is. I hope the other ones that are based off a finished book will actually be better than this.
Hmm.
But yeah, so far this one is not all that compelling. It is really pretty though. And I think fans that probably haven't seen as much anime as I have might be a little more forgiving of the story shortcomings.
Well, if you're saying it's one of these things that doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm.
like it's just this meandering, ponderous sci-fi gobbledygook.
It's not all that boring.
Okay. Well,
right. Like, stuff is happening constantly, but I couldn't get a feel for the characters because they're too stupid.
Yeah, the tone of it and the way, like, I saw the trailers for it, and the tone for this stuff reminds me of big, boring, too complicated sci-fi like Gossaraki or like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, I'm not a fan of this particular style of Japanese science fiction. Mar-X Scramble is like another example of stuff like that. That particular style, I'm not really a huge fan of that kind of storytelling. So I was already kind of like, I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. But you know, to hear that, I'm really not interested. Like,
right?
If it's pretty, maybe maybe to look at.
One other really weird thing about it is that to name all the secondary characters, and actually most of the primary characters, they're just randomly pulling names out of history.
Oh.
So there's
Copernicus. Yeah.
There's Sherlock Holmes. There's Einstein. There's actually Paul Bunyan.
Like you do.
Right.
Like it's just distracting.
It really is. It's super distracting. And after a while, you're just like, you just throw your hands up. You're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And here's the worst part, though. The big explodey. You know, it's basically an action movie. Mm-hmm. So the big exploding climax, even though everything's been gorgeously animated so far, the big exploding climax is clearly what they were still working on when the producer went, okay, you have to get this out in October. I know we said next year, but October.
Oh, man.
And so basically they pulled a Michael Bay Transformers, where it's just a bunch of, like, stuff happening on screen. You can't even tell what's going on, what's being blocked. Right. It's just like almost a bunch of just weird after effects things going on. Okay. And it's just, yeah, it's a mess. So those are the two that we were not thrilled by. Then there were two that we were really, really thrilled by. One is The Murder Case of Hannah and Alice. And this is a really weird anime because it's 100%, it's like Flowers of Evil in that it's 100%, rotoscoped.
Mm.
But the film itself was directed by one of my favorite directors, Shinji Iwai.
Mm-hmm.
Shinji Iwai, I've brought him up before. He did like All About Lily Shushu and Picnic and a bunch of my all time favorites. This is actually a sequel to a live action movie he made about 10 years ago called Hana and Alice, about two, you know, kind of whimsical schoolgirls that convince a boy with amnesia that one's his girlfriend and the other is the jilted ex who's trying to, you know, creep on him.
Hmm.
This is a prequel that takes place like 2 or 3 years before the first movie. And it stars the same actresses who, of course, are now pushing 30. But being cel-shaded, they get to age them back.
Hmm.
So it actually works.
Right.
It's really heartwarming. Like, it's a big, stupid grin. The cel shading looks way better than Flowers of Evil. It's still not perfect. They clearly made a bunch of, you know, apparently production on this film was just chaos.
Okay.
Like, they were losing, they were, like, losing current versions and having to go back to old versions. They were having to, they weren't shooting things properly and having to reshoot them. It sounds like just a disaster.
Hmm.
But the final product is really, really cool, and I really like it. If you weren't a fan of Flowers of Evil, don't let that turn you off, because it looks way better than Flowers of Evil.
Hmm.
And it's just very, very, despite it being a murder case, quote unquote, it's just kind of very good natured slice of lifey.
I wonder what the odds of that getting any kind of a release here are. Probably almost none. It doesn't sound very commercial.
from what I've told, no one's picked it up for the US yet.
Okay.
Someone has picked it up for the UK. I'm not sure if that's public yet, mm-hmm. but here, not yet. I really like it though. I hope it gets a release. From what I'm told, it's kind of a play for the otaku market, because that director, he just did a movie called Vampire that was supposed to be his English language debut, and it was kind of a giant, giant, giant cluster F.
Okay.
Like, it was like student film level bad. Like, I couldn't even believe it was from that. At any rate, so that was one. The other one, which is one that we actually won the award to, was Miss Hokusai.
Yeah, this is, so we ran, A&N premiered the English subtitled trailer for this. a little while ago. It's Production IG's art movie, right?
Right.
Big prestige film for this year.
Yeah, it won Annecy this year.
Right.
And it's... I love this movie. I absolutely love this movie. It's very close in feel to, like, halfway between Millennium Actress and a Takahata movie. That might be pushing it a little too hard. It's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still pretty darn good. It's very... The story is, if you could even call it a story, it's Oe is the daughter of Hokusai, the master Edo period painter, and she's also his apprentice and filling in for him occasionally. She's not quite there yet, but this is basically the texture of her daily life. Her living in kind of artist squalor with her dad and the assistant that comes by every once in a while who's kind of a goof off, her sick and blind younger sister that she visits occasionally that lives with her mother who's separated from her parent, from her dad. There's a whole lot of detail paid to little things like the sound of hundreds of feet at once on this giant wooden bridge that connects to main parts of town. It seems to be about the life of a work-for-hire artist and how all these things that make up their lives make their art. It's really quite a remarkable film, and I can't wait to see it again.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I assume, like, G-Kids or somebody will pick it up and put it out.
It's that kind of movie.
Yeah,
it really is a G-Kids sort of movie. I can't imagine, like... Maybe Funimation, but I kind of doubt it.
That's not their market.
No, it really isn't.
That's really not what they go for.
This is not an otaku movie. This is a, like, Ghibli-esque movie. And it's finally a Ghibli-esque movie that isn't about a kid losing a parent and then
going through some forest kind of... getting angry.
Yeah, right. The forest gets mad.
And here's comic relief characters, and here's a song by Susan Boyle.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's kind of the one that I'm looking forward to for this year, for big anime films. That sort of seems like the prestige one. So, yeah, they don't make a lot of them. So.
No, they don't. Yeah. And I, even fewer these days, but I'm grateful for what we get. And this is definitely one that I'm, really happy about.
Cool. We were supposed to get an interview with the director. I submitted questions. I have no idea if they were asked or what. Well, we'll find out. Hopefully we'll have an interview for you. That was one of those things where the director was suddenly available, and they were like, hey, do you want to interview him? I'm like, sure. When do you need questions? Right now. I'd be like, I'll see what I can do. So, yeah, hopefully we'll have an interview with that guy. So that was it for the film festival.
Right, and then I traipsed down to London for a few days and just kind of hung out and ate things and went to the British Film Institute, which was... really cool, and saw some art house movies and bought a whole bunch of stuff, and yeah, good trip, but now I'm playing catch up.
Had you been to the UK before?
Yeah, I went last year.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. But it was a different experience this time because I had been in Edinburgh for literally one night last year, and it was cold and raining, and this time the weather cooperated entirely, and it was a great time, and it's a cool little city. Cool. Really cool little city.
All right, excellent. Anything else you've seen lately?
I just saw Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I liked it, you didn't.
No, not a fan.
Liked it.
It's hard for me to even put into words why I don't like it. I mean, I didn't hate it. It's just, it didn't click for me.
I feel like that movie, also, depending on how you feel about him and his legacy and all of that stuff, I feel like people will project how they feel about him onto the film.
Mm.
And the film sort of lives or dies based on a little bit on your preconceived notion, a bit, of who that guy was.
Well, I fully acknowledge that he was a gigantic asshole.
Yeah, he was a monster.
Yes.
He was a genius monster.
Yeah, and I'm a big Apple guy. My old Apple IIgs is sitting right behind you.
Right, yeah.
As we talk, which he tries to kill in the movie, so hey.
Yeah. And in real life, yes.
Yes, and in real life. Here's the thing. I mean, that whole story that movie covers has been done to death.
Yeah.
you know, that,
documentaries and live action, and yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, and frankly, in my opinion, the best movie about that era was made on TNT in like 2000.
Right, yeah, Pirates of Silicon Valley. That movie's entertaining, but it's not, this is much closer to the truth than that movie was.
There's no, first of all, there's no Microsoft in Steve Jobs, the movie, at all.
But in terms of recounting some of these events,
no,
or the type of person he was.
The events, absolutely not.
Okay, well, the events are a little different. But in terms of the personalities on display, I thought it was much better Steve Jobs and fucking Noah Wyle.
Well, A, we don't know that. We have no idea. We've never met them.
No, but I was more impressed with the performance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, Noah Wyle, good actor. Michael Fassbender, great actor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, the performances are on a much better level than a TNT made-for-television movie.
Also, Seth Rogen was great. Mm-hmm. I thought he was great. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a much closer, much better interpretation of that guy than I have seen before. Mm-hmm. Remember, this was played by Josh Gad in that shitty Ashton Kutcher movie.
Well, we're not even... No one took that seriously.
No, but it was good. I thought he brought it... I thought he was great. I really liked it.
I think the biggest thing that movie had going for it was the structure, weirdly enough. And it's either you buy it or you don't. Like, it is structured sort of like a weird, arty, like, series of three...
It's three vignettes. Yeah.
Yeah, but the way they're staged is like sort of a combination of theatrical of a stage play and a music video, and which I really dig. But like, instead of it just being a straight biopic, it's like, okay, here's three events where like conversations that he had with these important people in his life are crammed into the event. Obviously, he didn't have all these conversations at this event, but pretending that he did and encapsulating these years of his life down into these moments and making it sort of this weird, like, surreal walk through his head while still keeping it grounded in reality. I thought that was cool. I thought it was really tough to pull off, and I thought that they pulled it off.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. I don't think they pulled it off as well, because I was just too distracted by that.
Okay.
But it's like, why is everyone coming to him with these existential life crises right before now, he's about to do a keynote?
Because
he would never put up with that.
But it's not real.
Like, the whole thing has this theatricality to it and this staginess to it.
Mm-hmm.
And once I understand the movie's thesis statement,
right,
I went with it.
Yeah.
Sure. I went with it. And so maybe that's why it was okay for me. What I didn't like were the Danny Boyle-isms
that
in the movie.
That drove me nuts. Why is he so addicted to 80s music video effects?
I don't know, but he is. And frankly, it made segments of that movie look... The thing is, I don't think it was necessarily his intention.
Mm-hmm.
They looked like 90s Apple ads.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with the shot where there's, like, Skylab on the wall, like, taking off behind him.
And this is where
while
my...
standing in his hallway. That looked like an old Apple ad. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was intentional. I think it's just this...
It wasn't even well done. The mat wasn't even matching up with the crack in the wall.
Yeah,
the mat was bad. Although, I really appreciated the attempt. I did like the aesthetic, even when it wasn't quite, like... meshing when it was a little too Danny Boyle or a little too 80s music video. I still liked it because it was weird for a biopic and it didn't ever break the character intent. All the character intent was super solid all the way through. The acting was really
good. The thing I don't ever want ever again mm-hmm. is the biopic where he's a little boy and an apple falls from a tree and he picks it up and then someone calls his name for dinner. I don't want that fucking biopic. But that's what we would have gotten if...
That sounds like a fucking Welch's ad.
Like Spielberg... changed biopics with Lincoln. He mm-hmm. changed it. And now we're getting these vertical slices mm-hmm. of a person's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's way more interesting and way more compelling and mm-hmm. way more exciting to watch.
Even that's getting very tired to me.
But there haven't been that many of them. Like, this is only a few-year-old trend.
I guess. Mm-hmm.
So, I also
appreciated the attention. Like, it could have been so boring, like, putting him in these, like, theaters and display houses and stuff like that for him to give these presentations. He has to have conversations in different part of the building. I thought they picked really good rooms to, like, illustrate his relationships to these various characters. Like, he talks to Jeff Daniels. Do I have the name of the actor right?
Yeah, you need to speak up.
He talks to Jeff Daniels in this big, long hallway with, like, these stacked-up chairs and this, like... It's like closed up cafe, except it's also...
I love that scene.
That was a great scene.
I love that
scene. Like, that was phenomenal. And so all the stuff where it's just like very thoughtful character stuff is great character stuff, which is how you make a biopic like resonant. You don't just go, this happened in this person's life. You sort of blow it up and turn it into a metaphor for who they were as a person. So right. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
But
I liked it a lot. I don't think it's like... Certainly not Best Picture material. I would imagine Fassbender might get a nomination, but it also bombed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they had much higher expectations for it. So it whether or not they'll give it a big awards push, I don't know.
It didn't gem in the holograms bomb.
No.
Few things do.
Look, that was that whole weekend was a bloodbath.
And I was a Gem fan.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's a little hard to watch these days, but
Gem's phenomenal. That cartoon is great. If they had just fucking gone for it, made the cartoon live action, it would have been fucking amazing.
Well,
you would have had the Misfits like hitting shit with wrecking balls, destroying things. Everyone would be wearing the craziest possible clothes.
Not with that director, wouldn't have been.
But I'm just saying, if you know, all bets are off, new team and everything, if you'd just fucking gone for it, a Gem movie that was just played straight and was the cartoon would be amazing.
It wouldn't necessarily. It could have accidentally ended up like John Hughes meets Across the Universe or whatever.
I'm talking about a hypothetical film where they did it right, not a hypothetical film where they didn't do it right.
Well, no,
I'm just saying.
Even if they did it right, it shouldn't have been bad, but it would have been entertainingly bad and not like, maybe teenage girls will like this if we pretend it's not related to anything.
I know, I'm just saying, in my head, there's an awesome Gem movie that just goes for it.
Also,
that just goes all in.
Let's be fair here, it did have a... It was a Blumhouse movie with a $5 million budget.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I wasn't expecting that movie to be anything at all. And frankly, like, you know, we love bad shit and have watched Gem recently and we're like, oh, they're making a Gem movie. It looks like it's terrible. But then we went to see a different film and the trailer for Gem in front of it was the entire film.
Yeah,
it was one of those trailers that show you everything.
The entire arc.
Yeah, the entire story arc of the film. So we had no reason even to watch it for irony purposes.
What are you going
to
choose? Your contract or your friends? I chose my friends. Movie over. And it's like, that was 90 seconds.
Yeah.
You ruined the whole movie.
Credits, yeah. I hope that, you know, for whatever reason, 10 years from now, someone takes another stab, and they're like, you know what? We're just going to do it this time.
When I was at the local multiplex over at the Americana this weekend, and there was a, I went and walked in the theater, the entire staff is wearing Gem and the Holograms t-shirts.
Right.
My soul immediately just ached for them.
Yeah. Yeah, the movie we saw that was, bombed close to as bad as Gem did in terms of scale would be Pan, which was just I said it on Twitter. when you watch a lot of bad movies, what you are searching for is the next Battlefield Earth, the next Waterworld, the next
the one that's just mind-bogglingly incomprehensible,
the next Batman and Robin, but you want it at a big hundreds of millions of dollars studio scale where they put the entire effort of the studio behind it. Everybody involved, there's a lot of money on the line, it looks lush and expensive, and it's just a giant fucking dumpster fire.
Yeah.
Pan is all of those things.
Yeah.
It is the mythical unicorn bad movie. Everyone says they want. When everyone says they want, I want to watch a bad movie and laugh, this is it. It's new. Like, when it comes out on Blu-ray, people, bad movie lovers, will flock to it.
Want 90s era CG monsters that look like they came out of Banjo-Kazooie? Well, check that off. Garrett Hedlund losing his mind on screen? Well, check that off.
What does he do?
So Garrett Hedlund plays Hook in this movie, but he's a good guy in this movie, and he's like Peter's sidekick. Mm-hmm. Garrett Hedlund is literally doing this bizarre American accent that he's sort of picking up and dropping. He's constantly jutting out his lower jaw, arcing forward and bugging his eyes out, and delivering all of his lines like this! And he does the entire movie like that.
Buckaroo?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
The whole movie he's doing this. Even during quiet scenes, he's bugging his eyes out, leaning forward and yelling all of his lines.
So it's like he got his entire act from like a Civil War reenactment
or
tour guide.
I can't
and
place
yes,
it.
And yes, for no reason that is ever adequately explained, they do kind of sort of jukebox musical sing Smells Like Teen Spirit and Blitzkrieg Bob.
Yes.
At some point for no reason.
Yeah, it is horrific. I'm calling it now legendary bad movie. I just don't see because typically now, if you had like a Battlefield Earth, it would not make it through the studio system without having all the weirdness sanded off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they wouldn't necessarily let a movie get through like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That something like it got through now is kind of a little miracle. And you're like, how did this even happen? Because there are no good choices in it.
Not a single one.
There is not a single good choice in that whole movie.
Pan, like, spoilers, I guess, Peter Pan's entire character transformative movement, like, his entire character transformative moment happens off screen.
Yeah.
After this huge build-up, it's like, I guess it happened somewhere over there, it doesn't matter. Anyway, and, like, they don't even show any point at which Hook actually would become a bad guy. The movie ends with them going, we'll always be friends, right? And he's like, yeah! And that's it. So you're waiting this whole movie for Hook to become Hook at some point. It doesn't. He might as well have just been a lost boy they made up. Just everything bad. So many terrible. Yeah. It looks like garbage, etc. Like, everything. When they shoot the natives, which are, like, they fix that, I guess, by making it just a multi-ethnic group of everybody's. Then they shoot them, they turn into pink smoke. Like, when people die, they explode into multicolored smoke. Like, it's a weird, like, surrealist art piece. And it's like, ugh, why?
What are you doing?
Yeah. Why?
Anyway, yeah, so if you like bad movies, Pan is your movie. You gotta see it.
Mm-hmm.
It is that movie. Anime, I have not been watching that much. We just did a podcast on Angel Beats. That's the last thing I watched. We're in the process of deciding what the next series review will be.
Mm.
We haven't really decided yet, but we better pick quick because it's going to be next month.
Yep.
Right now we've got it narrowed down to like two or three different choices, and maybe we'll put up a poll or something, but I don't know. We'll get to it.
Mm.
Not too much anime right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm watching a bunch of stuff from this
season. Yeah, well, so let's hear about it.
Oh, the biggest things for me this season are One Punch Man and surprisingly Noragami, which I wasn't really expecting. But the sequel to Noragami, or the continuation of it, is surprisingly really good. It's the first season was kind of a benign. It looked like maybe a shoujo thing with some action in it. But it really kind of caught people's attention when the middle part of it turned into this weird, I guess emotionally bare, angsty. I don't know, like, scraping up of this guy's character after he dies and is, like, coming to terms with the fact that he's dead and he kind of has to restart and all this stuff. And it's, like, really, really emotionally raw and extremely well-directed and some great animation. But, like, the second season, that was just the middle of the first season. And after that, they, like, dovetailed it with this sort of, like, open-ended, like, oh, we don't know if we're going to get a continuation, so here's something we made up about a girl getting amnesia and we'll end it. And then the second season is, like, them diving into the original material again, and it's just, like, episode after episode of, like, pitch-perfect emotional devastation, and it's like, which I wasn't really expecting, so people are freaking out about that, as well as they should. And, like, so if you skipped out on the first season of Noragami, you should watch it and continue into the second season, because it's just been, like, you know, the really good anime where an episode ends and you're just, like, oh, can't get any better or can't get any more, like, you know, tense than that, and then the next one is more tense and more tense. It's been like that, so it's like, yeah, that, I guess. It's very teenagery. You have to, like, kind of, like, big, raw teenagery emotions. But still, like, it's a gorgeous show. It's bones. It looks pretty good. So, you know, eh. And then One Punch Man has obviously been really good looking as well, so.
I've seen last week's, but not this week's.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. I like the show.
Yeah, this week they took a little bit of a week off, but they, like, occasionally need to rest their hands. Most lovingly animated thing in the most recent episode was a guy getting punched in the nuts, and they show the specific, like, the knuckles hitting the balls, and, like, and it was like, Jesus, you know, so there you go, like. The show always has something in it that makes people, you know, kind of, like, jaw drop, I guess.
Well, it's only 12 episodes, and they said, like, for sure this is not going to get to the meat of the story in the manga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know if this is, like, a lark, or if they're going to eventually do more One Punch Man. I imagine they will.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I don't know. It's kind of Madhouse doing everything they can to make it awesome, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, if nothing else, like, it's funny, and the action is kind of jaw-dropping. And even when it's not, like, jaw-dropping, it looks better than everything else this season still. So, it's, you know, when the animators need to rest their hands, it still looks better than everything else, so it's, you know, it's really, really good stuff if you like animation and cartoony, wacky stuff.
I'm also keeping up with Gundam, but I don't have anything to say about it.
Same. I tried it. It's like, this is good if you're not really into Gundam, and I tried it, and it's like, I have no feelings still. Like, my experience with watching any Gundam anything, even if it's pretty good, and I acknowledge that it's good, like 8th MS Team, it's like, I don't have feelings, though. Gundam doesn't give me feelings. Maybe it's because of the war plot.
The only war stories. Only Gundam that ever made an emotional connection with me ever was 0080.
Mm-hmm.
War in the Pocket.
Right, yeah.
And that's because it was, you know, child trauma.
Right,
I figured. Mean, the thing is, like, Gundam really, they call it the Star Trek of Japan. And I see it as it's just genre entertainment, and mm-hmm. it's something that I'll watch for entertainment, and that's it. And mm-hmm. I'm not looking for anything more than that out of it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of okay with that, but it's kind of an exception. Because normally I do require some kind of emotional hook to keep me watching.
Mm-hmm.
But that, for whatever reason, is the kind of genre entertainment I can just sort of consume and not really think that much about.
Right. Well, no, I like genre entertainment a lot. Like, I watch a lot of it. But, like, even then, like, I expect it to kind of... Like, genre entertainment, the thing this season that does give me feelings, even though it's just, like, boilerplate genre, is Ushio and Tora, because it looks good. I like the monster designs, and so it gives me feelings. I like the way that that show is directed and paced, and I like the...
It's also characters. Dealing with monsters, which you like.
I fucking love
this
monsters.
Show is dealing with robots, which you don't really care
about. I don't care about robots, and I actively sort of turn my brain off with complicated wars hell subplots. So Gundam, it exists. More Gundam exists. Yeah. I wish I was more into it.
It's a good Gundam, though. This is a good Gundam. It doesn't seem like a bad one.
Right.
Which is really all you can say. But there's already they already announced another show. So I don't know if that means this one isn't doing as well as they hoped or what. But I don't know. I'm enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be it for anime. Anything else
we're talking about? Yeah, I mean, there's other stuff, but I don't really... You know, nothing. There's more Haikyuu for people who like Haikyuu.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, like, people are like, oh, Fujoshi stuff. But once again, like, it's really well animated. Like, production IG, you can feel those kids, like, slapping the ball and hitting the court and stuff like that. And it's just, like, if you like stuff where you see an impact and it's like, oh, that hurts, or oh, that's funny. Like, IQ is very... There's some good animators on that show. Like, it's really impactful, I guess.
Right. So. Okay. All right. Well, we should go ahead and get to Twitter questions because we got plenty of them in our email backlog here. But before we do that, we need to take a break for this word from our sponsor. Hey, everybody. You know, it's that time of year when you place an order with your favorite anime and manga retailer online. Say, like, you go to Amazon, you order some anime and manga. You get that box in the mail. UPS guy brings it to your front door. You cut it open. You're excited. Your anime and manga is finally here. And out comes a ghost. Right? You open that box and a spirit of the night comes bursting out of it. Woo! You know, that, and then he's haunting you and knocking your stuff over and scaring your pets and pissing off your neighbors. Then you got to call an exorcist or a medium or somebody to come and get this ghost out of your house. And ghost removal is not cheap. We know what it's like this time of year, right? Everyone's had to deal with this. Well, I'm here to tell you that if you place your order for your anime and manga via RightStuffAnime.com, if you use RightStuff, they are offering 100% no ghost guarantee. That's right. You open your box, there will not be a ghost in there. And they can offer that to you at no extra charge. No ghosts, no extra charge. You got it. There's some other perks, too. For instance, if you're all about pre-ordering, you can pre-order stuff the minute it has a release date. And, get this, they don't even charge you for it. You put your credit card info in, you basically get in line, you claim your copy, but you don't have to pay for that sucker until it's in the mail. Until they ship it to you, they don't charge you. So there you go. You get free shipping on everything over $49, and for Canadian friends, over $249, and your shipping's free, plus they handle the customs paperwork for you, so that is sweet. They're packaging nerds. So in addition to no ghosts, there's extra packaging in there to make sure your stuff doesn't get dinged up. If you buy anime more than 4 times a year, you can join their God Anime Savings Club and get additional discounts and some discounted prices and some access to special promotions and an extra 90 days to return stuff. So say like a ghost sneaks in from the outside, gets in that box. That now, right stuff is not haunted, but you can never tell, you know, in this crazy world of ours, what's going to happen. So say, like, a ghost gets in the box, you open it up, the ghost comes out. Well, you stuff that sucker back in there and send it back to him. And you'll have an extra 90 days to return it. Can you believe that? Anyway, if you have any questions about this, you can give them a phone call. Their staff members know everything about anime and manga. They are just like you, so they can answer all your questions. They've got you taken care of. That's why you should order from RightStuff.com. Again, remember, 100% they are guaranteeing you open a box from Right Stuff, you will not be haunted by phantoms of the night. That will not happen to you. Check them out at RightStuffAnime.com. Okay, and we're back. Let's go ahead and get to our Twitter questions. We'll do the email stuff after we're finished with these. Let's see here. Net Bryant T asks, can a Blu-ray include both 4:3 and widescreen versions without having two copies of the movie?
No.
All right. Yeah, I guess because it's completely different data, right?
Right.
Unless you wanted to program where the thing was going.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you can't do that without zooming in anyway, and that technology isn't part of Blu-ray.
Right.
It was part of DVD, and it didn't work, and no one actually used it.
Right.
Completely broken.
Yeah, right. I remember that. Yeah. You would get it. Well, it says both panned scan and widescreen on it, and you're like,
And then they gave up and just made them flipper discs.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Ugh, those terrible flipper discs.
Yep.
God. Remember back when Pixar would reanimate their movies and move everything into the middle of the frame so that the full-frame VHS would look better?
Oh, I didn't actually see one of those. I only heard about it.
Yeah,
Was it all crowded and crappy?
Well, no, actually, it looked fine. I remember having A Bug's Life on VHS, and they did that to it. And, they did, like, a comparison featurette where it was like, here are the bugs are on this side of the frame, and then here's the Panascan version, and they're just in here.
Oh.
And so the movie looks a little bit more claustrophobic, I guess, but it's sort of an artful way of handling that. I guess that's when they realized that a lot of their market buys Panascan.
Well, yeah, I mean, back then you had to have Panascan for television also anyway.
Right, yeah, totally. So it made sense to them to make those. Obviously, they don't make them anymore, but yeah. Aegis 10 wants to know a very serious question. Does anime cause cancer?
Obviously.
Is it up there with alcohol and bacon at this point?
Mm.
A lifetime. If that's true, we're fucked.
It's a different kind of cancer. It's a social cancer.
In all seriousness, no, anime does not cause cancer. Yeah. We need to make sure people don't misunderstand us. Franco Bergson asks, are you going to have a rep from Crunchyroll on Ancast again soon? Yeah, we're supposed to have... I'm in the process of talking to Crunchyroll about having some folks on. I don't know how much of an industry podcast that's really going to be, but we should have a show with some Crunchyroll folks on soon. Soon. hopefully before the end of the year. I'm trying to get that set up. Also, from Branko Bergson, have you seen Beasts of No Nation? So this is the Netflix, we're going to try a theatrical release and put it out in theaters at the same time as its streaming thing.
Right. Theatrical release didn't work.
No.
But
were paying for the privilege on that one.
Yeah, no one came out anyway.
Yeah, right.
I've not seen it, but I need to. It's on my list.
Yeah, I hear it's very difficult to watch.
Yeah. I mean, it's about child soldiers, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, I was expecting a lighthearted romp.
Yes.
Branko Bergson asks, are you tired of Star Wars hype?
Yes.
Who isn't? Who is not tired of Star Wars hype?
You know, I saw someone on my Facebook feed just the other day marathoning the movies again.
Really?
And I just kind of head in hands just went, okay, there's something called opportunity loss here.
Yeah.
That 6 hours that you just spent watching the movies that you've watched God knows how many times, you could have been watching something new and expanding your horizons. It's not like it's giving you a unique point of view or anything, or that you're one of only a handful of people that notice this, or that the films really even bear that much study that you're finding something new every time.
Yeah.
It's just... Yeah, it's enough.
There's more restaurants than Chipotle.
Eating the breakfast cereal. It's like, this is my daily breakfast cereal.
I'm not going to lie. I'm really fucking excited for that Star Wars movie.
Yeah,
I think it looks really good. I bought tickets when they became available. I'm very excited for that movie.
I bought some
merchandise. All right, I am not at all absolved of any, like, not hyping up Star Wars. But it is... In my opinion, the most hyped up movie, the most marketed, the most pushed movie, I think, in my lifetime.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I cannot remember a marketing blitz like this for anything.
Whenever anything is marketed this much and there's this much palpable excitement for it, the last time I remember it happening was Episode 1.
Yeah.
And people were...
This seems like more than Episode 1.
Maybe
just because of the proliferation of the internet.
Well, yeah, internet, and also, you know, we're... older and more sentient now.
Yeah.
But people were in denial for a good 2 years after that came out that movie sucked.
I think this has a much better shot of being good.
Oh, I agree.
To be honest, the Phantom Menace trailers, people were making excuses for those.
But what I meant was that when there's this much excitement, the movie can do no wrong. Like, right. This actually insulates it against criticism.
Yeah. Well, it's like a threshold. A certain, like, a little too much excitement, and then the people's expectations are high enough that the movie can, like, instill a huge amount of anger in them. This much, like, cultish, I guess, it's excitement, and you're right, it has an insulated bubble around it of some kind.
Now, see, I'll take this hype, because at least it's hopeful hype.
Yeah.
Against the Back to the Future hype the other week. Because, okay, first of all, Back to the Future, the first movie, okay, I like it. Good movie. I'm sorry, 2 and 3 were awful movies.
I don't agree with you at all. I disagree. Sorry. You don't have any support on that one.
All right.
You'll find no purchase here.
Yeah.
They had to stop the narrative to draw a diagram.
Yeah, I know.
But I like
that movie.
When I was the breakfast cereal... The breakfast cereal comment I made a second ago, like, I should clarify, I'm not referring specifically to Star Wars, per se, as I was referring to the idea of watching the same thing over and over and over, and it's like, well, you know, just to some extent, like, I understand that it's a comfort food, but...
The thing is, I'm always kind of happy when it comes to this stuff, because I rewatch things very sparingly, I've only seen the Star Wars movies, like, I watched them a lot when I was a kid, and when the special editions came out when I was a teenager, I saw those in the theaters. I hadn't actually seen the original trilogy since the theatrical re-release in the late 90s. So I watched them again last year, and that to me is about the amount of time. 10, 15 years passes, and then I watch those again. And then it feels fresh, you've forgotten a lot of stuff, kind of feels like you're rewatching it for the first time. It's like 15 years, like more than a decade needs to pass before... I don't have any problem with people who rewatch stuff over and over again. I want to stress that. But to me, it seems like there's a lot of new... There's a lot of movies I have never seen, and right. I should get
many
some of those.
Movies.
Yeah.
I will also say that I never... I've grown to appreciate it as a teenager and adult, but I was not a Star Wars kid growing up.
Okay, yeah.
I was not.
Which is a thing.
Yeah,
that's a thing.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, we go to Disneyland a lot. Disneyland is, like, 70% Star Wars right now by volume.
Which is...
And it's about to get more than that, so...
For somebody who's, like, very much a Disney kid and less a Star Wars kid, like, I saw it when I was a child, but I wasn't as attached to it as I was all things Disney. It is like seeing somebody encroaching on your turf. It's like, what's all this Star Wars stuff doing here?
Yeah.
This is Disneyland!
I mean, like I said, I am really excited for that movie, but... I don't see how you can look at this hype cycle and be like, this is absurd. This is just fucking absurd. The thing is, like, by this time during the Phantom Menace cycle, there were people waiting in front of the Chinese theater by now for opening day.
Were there?
2 months ahead of time, yeah.
That's just being homeless.
Yep. That's what everyone said. They would go to their jobs, their place would be saved, but they basically lived in that line for, like, maybe it wasn't 2 months. Maybe it was closer to, like, a month. But they waited in line forever. And the movie they saw at the end of that was fucking Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Can you imagine wasting that much of your life getting excited and just sitting there waiting to watch fucking Phantom Menace?
You could make a movie about that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's
short.
That's certifiable. There is no other... I can't give any credit to that. That's just no.
Yeah, actually, I'm not sure there is no movie I would waste that much of my life.
No, I mean, it's still going to be in that theater a week later.
Yeah, because you know those guys were the only ones who saw The Phantom Menace. The rest of us,
right?
That's why they wasted 2 months of their life.
Right.
It's like waiting. That's like, man, this McDonald's is going to open up and sell a Big Mac, and I better be there. So, this McDonald's opens in 2 months. I'm going to wait.
I guess the equivalent would be like the McRib. The McRib is back. I'm going to camp outside this McDonald's.
It'll be available.
They open it up and there's no wait.
Yeah. Like, they're saying that movie's going to stream on Netflix in Canada next year. Like, why are you waiting? Why are you... There shouldn't be, like, a supply problem on this movie.
There is no supply problem. None. This will be in, like, 5,000 screens at once.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so Banker Birkin also asks, BoJack Horseman, yay or nay? Har, har, har.
Get it.
I just started watching this.
Yeah, I need to revisit it, because I was one of the people that watched like the first two episodes and
dumped it as, yeah. with good cause because yeah. the first six episodes are incredibly rough. The thing is, that show turns into a drama with a little drama with a little comedy in it, as opposed to a comedy with a little drama in it, mm-hmm. and it gets really good.
Yeah,
but that you literally have to sit through like seven episodes of it.
It literally starts. The tone change like sets in like noticeably hard and fast in episode 7.
Yeah.
And then prior to that, it has a different tone. It's more like, okay, it's a little grim, but it's sort of old Hollywood, like not old Hollywood, but like tired Hollywood canards you've heard a bunch of times. And right. like the worst episode in the whole show. And I say this as somebody who loves the show. Like, I really, really like it a lot. The third episode almost took me out. The third episode is about, like, a child star aging into, like, a Britney Spears, like, cliche. Ugh. And I almost gave up. I was like, oh, this is really, really tired, like, and the jokes are, I've seen them before, like, a million times. But yeah, once you hit episode 7, it's really, like, about something, and it actually kind of becomes funnier by sparing its best jokes and then focusing on drama for the rest of it, you know.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, those first six episodes, like, it has this sort of relationship with the existential void that feels kind of unearned because the characters are just kind of, they kind of drift into this really dark place for, like, a couple seconds, and then they'll come back. The darkness of the show becomes validated later, like through the tone. Like it gets validated by the tone of the show later. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, in the early episode, they're like, "Nope, this is a late night Adult Swim style comedy about show business, and that's what we're gonna make."
Wasn't its strength.
Isn't its strength.
Well, I definitely have to give another shot.
It's a cool show with a great opening sequence. Okay, Branko Berkson also asked last question. Any thoughts on what Crunchyroll is doing with Elation and Sumitomo? So Crunchyroll basically announced that now they're going to be on a bunch of production committees.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Good for them.
Yep.
Inevitable.
Yep.
Absolutely, because mm-hmm. the prices are through the roof, so the only way to avoid that is to be on the production committee and retain those rights that way.
Yep.
Smart. And I hope it works out for them.
Yeah.
All right. Chuo Dori asks, when you're on, are we any clearer as to what's happening with Voyager and the remaining volumes of Star Blazers 2199? No.
Nope.
Not as far as I know. There hasn't been any news on that.
I finished all those discs for them at the time, and I haven't heard another thing from them, but hey, whatever.
Yeah. Email them, I guess? Laugh when you don't get a reply? Okay, Ben the Bear asks, have you thought about getting rid of letter grades on reviews? Yes, and then I decided not to. Do you think people put too much focus on grades? Yes, but I'm not going to get rid of the scores.
Yeah.
That's every critic's problem.
Yep. They're a necessary evil, and, you know.
Some people need them, some people love them, some people hate them. Critics generally hate them, but they're necessary. If you take them off, people don't read the review. Mm-hmm. So, or at least a much smaller group of people read the review. So yep. You need to have them on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that big a deal. It's like, that kind of thing is like, I feel like they should exist. You want to give people more information, not less.
Mm-hmm.
So if this person needs a B+ or a B- attached to this review, fine. It's no skin off my nose to give it to them. If you don't care about scores,
mm-hmm.
don't care about the score. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be removed for your pleasure.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to care about it. Just leave it alone. This is not a criticism of this guy who sent in this question. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, if you don't care about the running time on a DVD,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't mean I shouldn't put it on the back of the box.
Right. It's like, critics hate them because they spend all this time trying to give specific context to their opinion, and then they have to boil it down to a single number, and then they know people will only complain about that number. But audiences like them because they can look at that, everybody looks at that first, and they look at that first, and it gives them context for the tone of what they're about to read, and they don't, you know, other than that, they don't want to jump into a potentially long piece without knowing kind of what the conclusion is. You know, they're reading reviews for information a lot of the time. Rather, entertainment kind of second, maybe. We hope entertainment a lot, but, you know, what can you do?
Trillion22 asks, does the live-action Ghost in the Shell bringing in the writer of Straight Outta Compton boost your hopes? It doesn't do anything to my perception of what that movie might be.
Yeah.
The fact they're putting a, frankly, A-list writer on it right now is probably a good sign.
I'm hoping. I think that means they give a shit.
Yeah. That's what I'm getting, is that they give a shit. And they have a good, or a well-regarded star attached.
Yeah.
They have a well-regarded screenwriter attached. Now, do they have a director yet?
No, I don't think so.
So, you know, these are good signs that, I mean, things can go seriously wrong from here, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know Scarlett Johansson's getting her full quote for a genre movie. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not doing that for a cut paycheck or anything. So they're mm-hmm. spending money on this, mm-hmm. which is good. Like, right. That movie's going to have to look kind of expensive, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want it to be good. Otherwise, it's going to be horrible CG... Just, yeah.
For me, it's more like, okay, what can this choice of property bring to a movie that people haven't seen before, or yeah. make them want to check out the source material?
Sure, yeah.
Or, you know, or just expose them to something new. Like, you see Mad Max Fury Road, it's like, oh, that's a new kind of genre movie. Not that introduced people to another medium, per se, but it introduced a lot of people to the original Mad Max movies.
Yeah.
And that's great, because I love those movies. At least, I love the first two. I don't like Thunderdome. But, like...
Nobody likes Thunderdome.
And some people do. Some people really like Thunderdome. You know, but, like, a lot of people hate the first one. I love the first one. But, like, anyway, lost my train of thought. Ghost in the Shell, I feel like if it comes out, like, the people who are diehard fans of the original material will see it. The people who give it a chance aren't really going to get anything new from it. It's played material. Like, the baseline is old hat cyberpunk stuff that we've done a lot in, you know, this is a post-Matrix, you know, world that we live in, so I don't think it's going to be new enough where they'll be like, maybe they'll say, well, that's nice, and then they'll leave. I don't think the material gives you enough to do something really new and exciting with it.
Well, what we don't really know yet is what Ghost in the Shell it's being inspired by or based off of, if any, because Ghost in the Shell is very, very different depending on what you're looking at. If we're looking at the original manga, it's a whole lot of nothing. Mm-hmm. If we're looking at the Oshii movies, it's this really, really, you know, deep, subtextual, you know, existential thing. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at Standalone Complex, it's a romp. It's a crime romp.
Yeah.
If you're looking at Arise, it's just something kind of crappy.
Yeah. Boring prequel.
Right,
stuff.
But I think the baseline, unless they get a director or just an art team or cinematography with a really amazing aesthetic, I don't think that there's anything about the content, regardless of what source they pull from, that's going to be really, that strikes people's fancy in a Mad Max Fury Road sort of way, you know, which is the only way to get notice. Really with us kind
yeah.
of.
All right. Anything Plus More asks, favorite anime of 2015? For me, that's Death Parade. For you, it's...
Blood Blockade or Yuri Kuma, one of the two.
Okay, and obviously yours is Miss Hokusai at this
right.
point, right?
I should preface I'm way, 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 way far behind on everything television, so...
Right.
Take that with a grain of salt.
Jeff Tebbets asks, this is technically our Halloween episode. We don't do the holiday episodes, really, so, yeah. He wants to know the most overrated horror movie franchise. Overrated has to be Jason.
Yeah, absolutely.
Has to be Jason. Those movies are uniformly fucking garbage.
The first one is kind of interesting.
A little bit.
It's really dated. The problem is it's old and cheap, but it's kind of interesting. Everything after that is fucking trash.
So
Jason X, which is funny or whatever.
Last Halloween month, Hope and I watched all of the Nightmare on Elm Street films and all of the Jason films.
No, I think it was 2 Octobers ago.
Wait a minute. What's more overrated, Jason or the Halloween franchise? Halloween's fucking terrible, too.
Yeah, it is. Halloween was more unique at the time that it came out, and it has a more interesting, weird...
Okay, but none of that, though.
Just
personal opinion. Like, if I were to come to you and say, okay, Hope, mm-hmm. we have to watch a Jason movie mm-hmm. or a Halloween movie, mm-hmm. which one of those do you go with? Which is, like, the lesser of those two evils?
I watch a Jason movie over the Halloween movie.
You would?
Yes.
Why is
but
that?
Because there's more kills... Halloween, less people die, and there's more, like, who was Michael Myers?
Yeah,
and they're made cheaper. Usually Jason movies have a little bit more money behind them. There's more like sex and dumb teenage comedy.
That's true.
All
yeah.
that stuff. It's the schlock that you associate with horror is more there. Halloween takes itself weirdly more seriously, but it's not. Yeah, Halloween is so inferior. So and okay. Jason is already bad. So you know. Nightmare on Elm Street is way better than both of those.
Okay, yeah. I think I agree. I think I would probably... Like, if it's like, okay, it's Halloween, let's watch a horror movie, I've got a Jason and a Halloween movie, I would ask, like, do you have anything else?
Yeah.
But if they're like, no, I have these two, then yeah, sure, I guess the Jason movie. Uh-huh. God, the Halloween franchise.
I mean, you have the first one, and you have Jason X. Those are both, like, interesting in some way. The rest, it's like, kill me now, it's so boring.
Yeah. Do you have an opinion on any of this?
No.
You're not really a horror movie guy in the first place.
I'm not. The only two I've ever watched and enjoyed all the way through were It Follows and The Babadook.
Right, which is sort of a new current trend, right. Which I'm happy for, because those are good movies.
Mm-hmm. Found footage was a dark time. Blair Witch is fine, but after that it's just a bunch of boring shit.
Scotty415 asks, why did Mad Max get so much praise for its feminist aspects, while other recent action movies, like Edge of Tomorrow and Dread, didn't?
Well, no one actually... Well, not no one, but no one saw Edge of Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Plenty in our bubble, most people saw Edge of Tomorrow. I think it's because those movies aren't anywhere near as good, and it's nowhere near as pronounced, and the woman in those movies, the female character, is not secretly the lead character of the film.
Right. Dread... I like both of those. Dread and Edge of Tomorrow.
They're nice, good movies. I like them both. They're
solid
great.
Action movies with good female supporting characters in them, / female leads. Mad Max Fury Road gets right up in your face and talks about issues.
That movie's about smashing
the patriarchy. It is about
patriarchy.
It's literally... And people are like... Yeah, people are like, don't call it feminist, you shouldn't call anything feminist or non-feminist. And I agree, sure, don't slap a label on an entire movie. But it's literally about those issues. The movie is about patriarchy, for God's sake. So I don't know what else, you know.
Yeah.
Ah.
You can watch all three of those movies and enjoy yourself a lot, regardless of how feminist they are or not.
Yes, they're all good.
All right, Greatest G asks, do you think Guillermo del Toro's recent praise on Twitter of Satoshi Kon's films could help raise renewed interest in his work? No. Of course not.
They're tweets.
Yeah.
The only people that paid attention to those tweets were the ones in our bubble who followed Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. They were retweeted from people in our bubble, and then more people from our bubble.
The very definition of preaching to the choir.
Yeah. That was neat, though.
Yes, it was.
It was very cool. Land of Obscusion asks... Not a lot of anime questions this time. Lando Excusion asks, do you think, even if Don Bluth's Dragon's Lair movie pitch Kickstarter succeeds, that the movie itself will ever be given the go? No!
No, God, no!
No, that's such a bad idea!
No, it's just not... Don Bluth movies were, like, a series of, God damn it, what a waste of money, in the 90s!
Yeah.
Fucking in the 90s.
What people loved were the 80s stuff.
Yeah.
People love Secret of Nim, Land Before Time, American Tale.
Mm-hmm. I will say I did not.
Yeah, okay. I didn't either. I wasn't a Don Bluth kid. I like Disney stuff.
I wasn't a Don Bluth kid either. But yeah, like speaking objectively, like those movies did well.
I didn't even know he was still alive.
Yeah, he is.
He's got to be really old by now.
Well, as...
Mormons are immortal.
As someone pointed out on Twitter, the last time someone gave Don Bluth $70 million, we got Titan A.E.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which I kind of enjoyed, even though I knew it was terrible.
That was a bad movie.
It's a bad movie. Don't get me wrong. I kind of enjoyed it, though.
Let's name this unfinished CG render Planet Bob. The end.
Yeah. I'm going to get you the Titan A.E. poster for Christmas.
Do not. Please do not.
I'll get you the full run of action figures.
But yeah, like
you can just flush your money down the toilet.
So for those who don't have like a direct perspective on what this is, it's Kickstarter. They're like, raise $1.5 million? Is that right?
$500,000.
$500,000. They're raising $500,000 for a talking point, basically, in a pitch.
They want a pitch. They want to be able to put together a small piece of animation for a pitch that they would then pitch to studios.
And say, hey, we raised $500,000. Please give us $69 million more.
$70 million. Yeah, that's what they're looking for. That's what they think it will cost for a traditionally animated film, which at this point has been proven to be a box office loser.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally animated film... based on an old cult arcade game mm-hmm. that has a bunch of weird sexual stuff in it, isn't really for kids,
mm-hmm.
and didn't have a story, aside from Knight defeats Dragon, fucks Lady. That's it.
And they want to do it like on cells, right? Is that what you said?
Yes. They were like, we're going to use traditional animation processes. This could resurrect traditional animation, is what it said.
Yeah, no.
The thing is, Disney already tried that. It didn't work for Disney, and mm-hmm. Disney made a princess movie, and it didn't work.
And they weren't fucking painting cells, if that's what they're thinking
of doing. I don't know if that's what they're thinking of.
Okay, that would be bizarre.
Has there been interest in this? Like, has this Kickstarter gone anywhere?
I haven't looked at the total yet. I don't know if it's a go, but it doesn't... Last time I looked at it was like a day after, and it was only at like 30,000. So maybe not. I don't know.
I'm looking it up now. Go ahead. Keep going.
He also asks, Well, he continues the question, or is traditional animation in theaters a dead art over here? I don't know that it's dead. It's just a way of doing things that doesn't generate a lot of money on its own.
It is out of vogue until they can find a way for the budget and the expectations to match up, but they can't for a traditional.
If traditional animation, good-looking traditional animation, ever becomes very cheap to produce,
yeah,
you're going to see a lot of it.
It's one of those things that someone is going to have to make a killer app.
Yeah,
in order to get that back in vogue again, and that's a tall order.
Yeah,
I just looked up the Dragon's Lair Kickstarter. After 3 days, it's at 75,000 out of 550.
They might make it.
That's I don't know that if it hasn't set the world on fire already, that's a tall order.
Yeah, maybe it won't.
But isn't the rule 40% in the first 48 hours or 72 hours or something like that?
Well, this is one with like name recognition, so that should really front load it.
Yeah.
Well, but if they're supposed to have 40% in the first 72 hours...
I don't remember the exact, but it's close to that. Or
something. Oh, yeah, then no.
No way.
No.
But you're asking people to give you money to make something
make a pitch.
Yeah, make a pitch. That's it.
That's
not much of a problem.
Give us a chance to maybe make this movie. I understand it. It's just like, I'm not going to give you money, man. All right, Red Subclair asks... How often do you think fans misjudge the intentions of creators behind any given show, for better or worse? The Wind Rises was an eye-opening example of this, but similar behind-the-scenes contents are only rarely translated. So fans watching a show and misinterpreting what the meaning or the intent of it was, and then you find out later the creator said, oh no, it actually meant this. Kind of like Evangelion, right?
Right.
Everybody insisted all the Christianity stuff meant something, and then they just came out and said, nope, doesn't mean anything. And it doesn't when you're watching the show. It's just there to look at.
Right.
But in terms of misjudging things, so like, here's the thing. It's not so much that similar behind-the-scenes contents are only rarely translated. It's that rarely do artists ever just openly tell you what their movie is supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
They would much rather hear your interpretation of it, because the more interpretations they get, it's more creatively fulfilling.
Yeah, there's plenty of times where you see interviews with directors and the like, and they don't even broach the topic.
Yeah.
They just don't. In fact, that's usually the case, especially with anime guys who are, you know, notoriously guarded with that sort of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And in my 15 years interviewing anime people... They never tell you.
Yeah.
They don't want to tell you what the theme is. They're not interested in that. They will always humble, play it down, hand wave it, say, oh, it's just a fantasy movie. Mm-hmm. You're like, but half of it is about the Vietnam War. And they're like, it's just a fantasy movie. And you're like, okay, all right, you don't want to talk about it. Okay, I understand. You know, like, that's fine. But the odds that anybody ever really... just comes out and says, here's what my movie is about, that just doesn't happen. Yeah. So, and part of the fun is interpreting it, what it means to you, and how it comes across to you. Like, that's supposed to be kind of the point of art, is that you personally take something away from it. The artist expresses something, and whether or not you got it dead on with what that artist was trying to say... Mm-hmm. It's there, but it's a little bit besides the point.
Right. You know? I mean, there's also the obvious other side to it, where it's like, okay, they spent months and years, like ripping themselves open and putting their guts into a thing and then having to take their guts back out and put them in and sew it back up. It's like, they're not going to be like, so tell us what it means. And it's like, do the work yourself. Like, I put all the work into the thing, you know? Like, I'm not just going to tell you. Tell me what you think.
Okay. All right, we got to plow through some of these.
Okay.
Abzero now asks, did the second Attack on Titan movie make you say, I've been waiting for this day? No, but it did make me say, what a waste. I didn't like it. You liked it.
I didn't. No, I didn't dislike it. I appreciated what it was trying to do. I did not yield emotions from me, but I did not think it was a bad movie. I think they achieved what they were trying to do. Unfortunately, it was something that the fans of that franchise did not want, and they probably should have known that as well.
Right.
That's some faint praise.
I really like the first part. It's really cool, really good. It's a cool movie.
Mm-hmm.
Second part just squanders all that opportunity. It would have been much better as a 2.5-hour single film.
I agree.
The entire second movie as a 40-minute final act.
I agree with that. I think it would have undeniably been better as a 1 2.5-hour movie, but like, I didn't think it was bad. It's really not, I don't know, not fair to call it a bad movie. It's just that it has little lofty-minded goals. It's certainly ambitious. Like, they were trying to do a thing. They cared about the movie very much when they were making it, obviously.
Terry Funhouse asks, wait, no, we're not taking this one. CTR0012000 asks, that's a great username. When I put in a Funimation Blu-ray disc on my PS3, an image or avatar appears for the disc from the show.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't happen with Sentai discs. Is this a hard process to code? Is there another reason?
It's literally two JPEG files.
Okay.
It's total laziness.
Okay.
To their credit, they were cranking out a lot of discs very fast, and you know, when graphic designers make menus for me to a fault, they always forget about it.
Right.
Because it's just this little tiny stupid thing that no one even remembers.
It's a total crapshoot if I put a disc in, no matter if anime or not, whether or not it's going to have any kind of JPEG.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. playing. I love it when it's there, because it makes it feel like they really put the effort in.
Mm-hmm.
But more often than not, it isn't.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's not.
Stupid little aside. So, Blu-ray, they have those JPEGs that they use for the thumbnails. There's two sizes that you have to prepare. And unfortunately, they updated the JPEG spec, you know, the metadata that comes along with it,
mm-hmm.
and it's not compatible with the Blu-ray stuff anymore.
Right.
And they can't update the Blu-ray spec because that would cause a whole bunch of other problems that need to be upgraded, etc. So, in order to make those JPEGs, you have to either use Adobe Photoshop CS2 or older.
Nice.
Or open them and resave them in Windows Paint.
Of course.
Yes.
Well, all right, then.
All right, let's see here. QB the Third asks, if Streamline didn't get screwed by Orion, would they still be around today or would have lasted longer than they did? Maybe they would have lasted longer, but obviously the need for that business sort of went away.
They were very stuck in that era of anime consumption, and I don't think they would have lasted that much longer keeping doing what they were doing. And that interview with Carl Masek, he seemed to still kind of be in that mindset, I thought.
Right.
Yeah. So, no, I don't think they would have lasted that much longer, but they would have definitely lasted longer than they did.
Yeah, I think so. All right, Mario Letris wants to know, is the set list ever going to come back?
Mm. Well, I mean, like, we'll obviously do top openings and endings for this year. Like,
yeah, we'll get one of those. That's
definitely a thing. Past that, I don't really know. It just kind of depends on demands of my time and editorial and whatever, but it's not the biggest traffic pull in the world, and it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, the thing is that
so much work.
The thing
it's
is
a lot of work.
The set list takes forever to make. Right now, we're at Justin's apartment to work on one giant project. Mm-hmm. We have another giant project that we are working on that nobody knows about really yet,
mm-hmm.
and then on top of all of our other work.
Yes, exactly. So,
and writing is more important. In terms of, like, what the site needs. Mm-hmm. And so the set list happens when we have time for it, when you have time for it.
Yeah, basically.
We will have that top ten openings of the year.
Mm-hmm.
That will be out around the holidays.
Yeah.
That will come out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one we can promise you right now.
Yeah, the rest, we'll see. You know, we'll just see.
Okay. Sean Kleckner sent in a question because he's not in part of this podcast enough. He's the interview next week. This has become the Sean Kleckner show. If there was one show you wish you hadn't worked on, what would it be? This is obviously for you, Justin.
Oh, man. Loaded question. I'll just play it safe and say almost all of the hentai that I worked on.
Okay, that's the safest possible answer.
Yes.
No defunct companies that you can...
That's the problem. All the real answers are still, the companies are still around.
Right.
So I can't say.
Well. Okay, so we had a bunch of questions via email. Some of these are a little longer than usual. And maybe a little bit more personal. So I saved them for this, so let's go through these. There's like six of them here.
Okay.
From Joe. Joe asks, a while ago you mentioned on the show that all of your hobbies involve sitting on your ass watching screens and how you had to just start working out. I realize this myself, but I find working out to be really boring, especially on a treadmill, even if I'm watching or listening to something. What do you recommend? So I guess this guy had the same epiphany I did, where I'm like, you know what? I should do something today. What do I like to do? Watch movies, play video games, and read. What do I like to do that involves moving a limb?
Mm-hmm. Hey, now, you move your thumbs when you play a video game.
This is true. So I just started going to the gym. And yeah, well, I don't have a problem where I'm bored even if I'm listening to something. I listen to podcasts and watch TV while I'm on the treadmill
mm-hmm.
or on the elliptical. But what do you recommend for this guy? Like, if he's bored by, because obviously the obvious answer is find a hiking trail.
Right. Well, even that, if some people are bored walking.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you can't appreciate the kind of meditative mode of doing a run or a jog, then that activity probably isn't for you. And that is a meditative mode. You can't stay as engaged as you normally are in your day-to-day life when you do that sort of thing. You have to kind of tune out and kind of go mentally adrift.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's not an option for you, your best bet is probably in physical activity that's a little more mentally engaged, like some sort of class.
Yeah, I was about to say class, maybe get a trainer.
Yeah, or, you know, a spin class or CrossFit, or maybe not CrossFit if you're, but there's a bunch of stuff that you can be engaged with mentally. And if you need that mental engagement, then that's something you clearly need to pursue.
Right.
Yeah, like maybe like a local game league of some kind, or martial arts or dance or whatever, like, you know, gets under your skin, whatever makes you excited in some way. Like, certainly there's some sort of, like, physically geared activity that you're into, whether that's more of a team thing or personal performance thing, or like a macho, like, muscle-building kind of thing, like martial arts, whatever the case may be. Something, right?
Yeah. There's plenty of stuff you can do. Just, I would, yeah, class. Look into classes, because that's going to be engaging you directly and keeping your... You need to stay alert so you can pay attention to what the instructor's asking you to do. Like, it's much more mentally active than just getting on an elliptical and zoning out, you know.
I would say I had the exact same problem for many years.
Right.
Yeah.
Until you found CrossFit, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right. This is from Anonymous. It's kind of long. It's an interesting question, though. So she says, I don't know if this is he or she. You guys talk about relationship stuff occasionally, and I thought I'd ask about my situation as a shot in the dark. I started dating a great guy about 6 months ago. We both loved anime, and that was kind of the center of our relationship. For a long time, though, we only watched stuff that I liked, and he didn't talk too much about what he liked. As the months have gone on, I'm getting to know him more, and it's obvious he's really into the fan service stuff. He really liked the dungeon show with the boob string, for example. He doesn't tell me about it because he's embarrassed. He tends to hide things like that or only mention them in passing. I want him to feel comfortable telling him about this stuff. I don't like fan service, and maybe complained about it too much early in our relationship, but because I don't like it, I also don't want to hear a whole lot about his latest boob shows. What should I do? I'm not sure we've ever gotten direct relationship advice in this show, but
yeah,
I like this question. It's an interesting communication thing. Basically, this guy really likes fan service stuff and is hiding it from her because he doesn't want her to think that he's a creep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm assuming this is a lady. I apologize. I'm just going to use that pronoun because I don't know your gender. I'm sorry.
Well, there's not a whole lot of male fan service stuff.
Sure, right. Yeah. Yep, no, there is. There is now. Yeah, plenty of it.
Now there is.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. That's what I'm getting, is that he thinks it's creepy, so he's keeping it from her. Personally, I kind of applaud him. Mm-hmm. I think that's smart.
It's self-aware.
I think if you're in a new relationship and you're like, check out these sweet anime titties that I'm into, the person's going to be like, okay, well, I'm just going to erect a wall here. And yeah.
There won't be much erecting in that relationship. I'll stop.
Okay. Yeah. when he's alone. But anyway, so I think the problem here is that what you're saying is that you want him to open up to you more, but you spent a lot of time bitching about fan service. And he feels like he can't talk to you about it.
Which
but you
openly seems
say,
reasonable that yeah, he can't.
Which, if the relationship is working fine without him going on at length about his fan service stuff...
He knows that you don't like it, and he's not, you know, force shoving it in your face, so what do you want
isn't
exactly?
Isn't this just him being considerate?
Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think... Well,
it's like,
so the,
she knows it's there. It's not like he's hiding a porn stash.
Let me put it to you this way. You're 6 months in. That's not that long. If in 2 years he still doesn't feel comfortable, at that point you might start to think that maybe you are asking this guy to stifle a little too much. If he really is into that stuff, there's nothing wrong with it at all. It's just boobs. Get over it.
Boobs,
like,
boobs.
Men like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Lots of men do anyway.
Right.
There's no, like, putting that much of a stigma on it I think would make him uncomfortable. But you're 6 months in, he's just being considerate right now.
Yeah.
I would just appreciate that, maybe, and say, okay, well, when he's comfortable, don't make him feel uncomfortable, and don't chastise him, maybe, when he brings it up, but If he's doing
his best to kind of keep things stable and like not be like too, you know, he's trying not to creep you out, and that's good. So, you know, if he starts opening up more and you find there's a disconnect, then that's a problem. But, you know, just don't push too hard. I think things seem like they're, you know, like, it's reasonable. Like, y'all don't have to know everything about each other's kinks. Like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you have some kinks that you wouldn't broadcast to him, and that's totally okay.
Yeah, I bet there's stuff he doesn't know about you. Yeah, anyway.
Now.
Would you be shoving, you know, 20 shades or 50 shades of gray in his face?
Probably not. Yeah, exactly. This is a guy who's trying to make this work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
All right. Rachel asks, is it still worth it trying to find work writing about anime? Yeah, it is. More so now maybe than previously because there are more outlets paying. I know my anime list is now paying people to write about anime. You can still get work at the usual places that we're hiring people, like Otaku USA and some other places that do hire you to write about anime. We are actually hiring more often than ever now for writers. So yeah, I think it's still worth it. If you think you're going to make a living doing nothing but freelance writing about anime, that's maybe another thing, and you need to broaden your portfolio. And we've talked about that a million times, so I won't go into it again. But you can get paid to write about anime right now. I would say if you're giving up now when it seems like there's more opportunities than ever, I think you're making kind of a mistake. So just stick to it. Get out there. Try again. You know, see who's hiring and who's not, and see what you can do. Don't give up. Now's a bad time. Mm. Keep looking for it. Anonymous asks, are conventions still fun for you? I'm in my fifth year of going to Otakon, and the magic is wearing off. Mm. Well, having done this for a long time, conventions start feeling all the same around then, I would say. Yeah. Maybe 5 years, they start feeling all the same. This is not to diminish these conventions or what they try to put together, but
if you go to anything like 5 years in a row and it's a very controlled space that kind of yields similar things each year for new people, then, you know, it's going to seem monotonous to you.
If you make a big trip to the same theme park every single year, you're going to see a few different things, and that's it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you will have experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going to get stale for you.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, cons stop becoming about the con and start becoming more about seeing the friends that you only see at cons.
Yeah, and that's totally valid.
Right. So I look forward to the cons every year to see the specific group of people that I really need to catch up with.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. I don't
look forward to any specific panels or events.
I think I go in ebbs and flows. Sometimes I look forward to the con itself. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I appreciate it more. Sometimes I appreciate it less. It's always different.
You couldn't pay me to sit through a masquerade right now.
Well, of course. No, I would never do that.
I look forward to cons every year, but that's just because I keep myself busy, like, and I'm still green. So, like, it's still newer to me, and I like being busy at a convention, but I wouldn't want to just, like, sit in a panel room or anything like that. You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to change if you make new fun and you have con friends and things that you like to do that are sort of maybe not directly related to the con itself, like you're not looking forward to this one panel or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're just going and having a good time.
Yeah.
That's what the con will eventually become for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that it would kind of become that for you maybe the third time you went.
Mm-hmm.
Like the third time you go to with the same convention in a row, you're going to be like, all right, I've seen what this con has to offer. It's generally the same every year. Different guests, but it's generally the same stuff.
Right.
So I'm going to, yeah. I mean, conventions are no different from any other big event like that. All right. From Anonymous, second to last question here. How much nerd stuff do you think it's okay to display in your home? I recently moved to my first apartment, and while I have a lot of figures and anime posters, I worry that having all that stuff everywhere in my living room makes me a stereotype loser. But part of me wants to put it all out, and that's who I am. I recently started going on OkCupid dates and potentially will be bringing girls back, so I'm wondering what the right move is here.
Okay, well,
you want to make your home not look like a sociopath.
Well, yeah, there is a fine balance.
I think it's a balance. To me, it's the one item. You have the one item from the show.
Mm-hmm.
You pick the one thing. That's out. The rest of the stuff is either in its own room, so you have one nerd room.
Yeah, nerd rooms are good.
Your office should maybe be your nerd room. Mm-hmm. Your living room, if you want to present the image of somebody who, I don't know, I don't want to just say has their shit together, but
that's
a little unfair. I think if you just want to look like a balanced person.
Yeah, balance is a good word.
You want to look like a balanced person, then you'll have the stuff that is part of your passion out in your living room, but it's not going to be this shrine to anime, like in your living room.
Here are the rules.
Don't put wall scrolls up or posters without frames. Just don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but wall scrolls, no, absolutely no. Wall scrolls will never not be tacky.
And we're talking about you want your living room to look like an adult lives there.
Yes.
Right. And here's the thing. So if it's just you and you're sort of still, like, you're not entertaining a lot of guests or anything like that, and this is just your cave, like, do whatever you think looks cool or whatever. But you're talking about, okay, bringing girls home, I would suggest, like, the nerd room is a really good idea. You feel like this is the nerd sanctum, and it kind of makes you feel good, and it's like, hee-hee, there's so many tchotchkes.
It's also
everywhere.
Your special space.
Exactly. And
it
then you
feels
can also,
more special.
And you
way.
Can keep the living room and the bedroom and everything like that a little more, like, not normal, but what's the word? I guess balanced, tasteful, not liable to raise a bunch of questions from people that come over. So
yeah.
I like the idea of the nerd room a lot. Like, that's always kind of a, I don't know, that's always satisfied my particular problem with that as well. So,
yeah.
You know.
I try to pick a few things that go in the living room mm-hmm. that are super nerdy, and then the rest goes in the office, which mm-hmm. is the nerd room. Mm-hmm. So I that's always been a balance for me. I mean, at the same time, I do want to stress, if you want to put anime shit all over your living room,
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
Do you. Like, don't...
Don't try to please other people.
Yeah, this is... But it's very smart that... I think it's good that you're self-aware enough to know that if you're bringing home girls that you are meeting online,
mm-hmm.
and you have it's like a first or second date territory,
yeah.
you do kind of want your apartment to look like a normal person lives there.
Yeah.
And I think you have... touches, flashes of your nerd obsession
mm-hmm.
are in the living room, but it otherwise presents the image of a balanced person who
mm-hmm.
hasn't sunk their head wholeheartedly into this fandom.
A handful of figures in a case next to the computer, fine.
Sure.
Every flat surface covered in figures,
yeah.
not
yeah.
fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially if they're all booby figures and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, last question. From Paul. He says, I've been listening to your podcast since high school. So
I
obviously,
hope he's in college.
So, I think he is, based on the question. So obviously this question doesn't seem totally left field, since you guys seem to identify as snobs, too.
All right? Yay.
My friends all think I'm a snob because I don't like Marvel movies or Attack on Titan. I don't hate them, I just don't care about them. I like other stuff more. This wasn't that big a deal until some of my friends started making a really big deal out of it. And it felt like they were trying to push me out of our social group. I'm worried I'm going to lose my friends because I don't like the exact same movies they do, which is dumb to me. What should I do?
Well, they sound like kind of pieces of garbage to me.
You know what? So I've had friends like this.
Are you still friends with them?
No. In college, I had friends who we would go see a movie. Me and like two other guys would walk out of the movie saying that had problems. And they tried to ostracize us from the group for being, like...
Too critical.
Too critical.
Yeah.
Me too critical? But it was... Like, I would cop to it if it wasn't just me. But literally, like, we walked out of, like, Blade 2. And we
yeah.
were like, that movie had some problems. And this one girl who was obsessed with being positive about everything all the time...
Mm-hmm.
Hated the fact that we would talk about the problems the movie had or that what we didn't like about it. And slowly did one of these things where they sow a campaign against you, right?
Mm.
They try and get you out of the social group.
Yeah.
It is a thing that people
yeah,
do.
Absolutely.
I will tell you, based on personal experience, cut and run.
Yeah.
Find real friends.
Yeah.
Because,
oh, so I'm not wrong.
No. So if you have this kind of experience and the person is seriously upset with you and wants to start trying to push you out of your social circle because you didn't like Guardians of the Galaxy enough,
mm-hmm.
fuck that person.
Yeah.
Find new friends. Like, I know that's not the easiest thing in the world to do, and I know it's scary to find a new social group, but if that person is succeeding at pushing you out of the group...
If they're so intolerant of your opinions that don't line up with theirs, they're mm-hmm. not good people.
Also ask yourself this. If they don't like something... If they complain about something, is that suddenly okay? Because if that's true, then that person is not only being shitty to you, but they're being a hypocrite.
Yeah.
And that's not cool.
And I mean, like, if you want to kind of see where the balance lies and whether your feelings are valued within the group or not, like, just sort of make sure that, like, when you're criticizing something, when you're talking about you don't care about something, you still allow other people to talk about it. It's like you don't like interject with, I don't care about this, and here's what I care. You don't want it. You don't try to take control away from the group, because that's shitty no matter your situation. And also that you don't equate, I don't like this, with you're dumb for liking it. You don't want to make them feel like they are undervalued, because that can lead to, you know, that can be a problem for people in our position.
Yeah, it's true. We don't know if this guy is the, is being as fairer about this as he
we're only getting his perspective on it, but,
tender balance.
But here's the thing though, like, you're absolutely right, it's really important. Like, if you're in a group of people and everyone's standing around talking about how they love this movie, mm-hmm. and you're like, that movie sucked, mm-hmm. you need to be super diplomatic. Try not to talk. Mm-hmm. Try not to talk. If everyone's standing around having a great time talking about how much they love this movie, don't mm-hmm. throw a wet blanket on it.
Yeah.
They're not going to like you.
It is surprisingly easy when everyone is really jazzed about something. It is surprisingly easy to suck all the joy out of the room for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't do that. And I, you know, that was one thing I had to learn, because early, like in high school, I think I was like that. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn eventually, like, okay, you need to, like, be diplomatic, couch this stuff, and if everyone's having a, like, talking about how much they liked it, mm-hmm. don't run in and say, nope.
Yeah.
You know?
Nope, look at me.
It actually goes the other way, too. Mm-hmm. If everyone's standing around talking about how much they didn't like something, and you're like, I liked it, they're going to give you a hard time and maybe ostracize you a little bit.
This is something that doesn't really happen as much when you grow older, because because you don't spend that much time around your friends. And so
everyone cares less about whether or not you like to move.
Trivial things.
Yeah, like we all have real problems. Like, you know, getting to work. And, but
keeping a job,
Yeah, so if you can be diplomatic and keep it going long enough, then this will eventually be less of a problem.
But yeah, but if they are the kind of people who are like, we're all friends because we like the same things, and I don't know if he can be in our friend group because he doesn't like the same things, then fuck
them. Well, here's what happens. If it's a group of friends where it's just built on we all like the same things and you're all in school together, mm-hmm. Those aren't real friendships.
Not at all.
And aren't, like, you're just getting out of this early. All of those other people will get out of those friendships in a couple years.
Yeah.
You're just the first to jump ship.
We're all friends because we like the same thing is a, that does not last. It's not a good basis for a friendship.
10 years from now, those people are going to have trouble remembering each other's names.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing. This is just humanity. It's just life.
Right.
It's just that it might feel like, oh no, my friends, you know. No. These are kind of, I hate to put it this way, they're disposable college buddies that you are just sort of sharing space with in this time. And it sounds like if you have, like, one or two guys in there that you are getting along with really well and you've had a deeper relationship with them,
mm-hmm.
maintain those and don't hang out with the group.
Yeah.
You can do that, which you can totally do that.
Yeah.
So,
hopefully that is a...
Best of luck to you, young snob. It'll be tough out there. Anyway, that wraps us up. Thanks a lot, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good times.
All right. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Justin for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or a review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.